Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG, online kpcg.fm, at live link at thetrumpet.com. This is Trumpet Radio Live. A lot to talk about on today's program. Will Angela Merkel run again for the chancellorship of Germany? They're not sure. We'll have details about that. A surprising disorder that makes some people overweight. You'll be pretty surprised, I think. And you won't believe a new college course being offered. You think you've heard it all. Oh, wait. There's more on the way. And the continuing saga of the Christian bakery in Oregon. That and more on Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on this Thursday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. We're at 101.3 KPCG here in Edmond, Oklahoma City, and all around the world at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. Grant, you said last evening you went and watched the Thunder game down in the city. They won, close game against the Houston Rockets, against my my favorite, Sam Decker from the University of Wisconsin.
That's right.
But
he played really well.
Yeah.
Several three-pointers for the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, I kind of watched him. I didn't know much about him until he was in high school because he hit the game-winning shot in the high school championships, three-pointer. And then, you know, so anytime a guy's from your kind of local area, you follow him through, you see where he goes. And he stayed there locally at Wisconsin and then NBA. So pretty amazing that the kids can do that. You know, they're just high school like anybody else. And all of a sudden, you're seeing him out there playing basketball.
Yeah, he's tall and he's pretty long, so he obviously has the attributes that you need for it, and he has a great shot.
He is, yeah, he's improving. So he had back surgery last year, so hopefully that doesn't hurt him long term. Anytime you start having back surgeries, that's always a little nerve wracking, I think. But speaking of the NBA, there's a trade rumor out there, Golden State talking about maybe getting rid of Klay Thompson. They say when it comes to trade rumors, no league does it better than the NBA, whether they seem crazy or not. The latest, Klay Thompson one, it seems crazy, but it's getting a little more traction. They're thinking Golden State might be trading Klay Thompson to the Boston Celtics for Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder. So not official by any means. And, of course, both sides are like, no, never would happen. But that they always say that right before they trade a guy.
That's true.
So who knows? But the one general manager said that Klay doesn't fit in Golden State anymore because Kevin Durant's there now.
Wow.
So who knows? May happen, may not. It's just one of those rumors, but they've got to write about something to keep him busy in between the games.
I actually feel like that would make the Warriors a lot better than they are right now. A couple of really tough defensive guys on a team that right now is pretty soft. I mean, every single game they're giving up 120 points.
Yep, and I think that's what they're thinking. Get some defenders. Bradley's a really good defender, Crowder too, and then they don't really need the shooting. They've got plenty of guys that can do that. So
the funny thing, though, is if you remember, Crowder was the one who just launched all over Kevin Durant because basically the Celtics, when they were trying to recruit Kevin Durant to come to their team, actually showed the specific way they were planning to knock off the Warriors. They showed him the whole game plan because they're like, well, surely he would never pick the team that just knocked him out of the playoffs. Well, sure enough, he did.
Yeah.
And then Jay Crowder was just livid that Durant would do that to them.
Maybe they were doing some double trickery. Show him a fake plan, so knowing he'd go to Golden State. Well,
it'd be awkward, though, if they're now going to be on the same team. But apparently the guy who brought up that possible trade rumor says that he talks about trades all the time, doesn't necessarily know for sure, but he does happen to know both GMs, so it's kind of hard to believe that maybe he knew nothing and now he's just walking it back.
Yeah. Well, one of the guys reporting this, and I think it's the same guy that used to play in the NBA.
Yeah.
Brian Scalabrine, which he's famous for being one of the worst players ever. I mean, hey, if you make it to the NBA, you're a good player, no doubt. But he was on that Celtics team that won the championship, and he had really no role other than to cheer on the bench. And so, but then I think he became more famous because after they won, he was kind of mocking and bragging about how great he was and how he won the series. It was a joke because he didn't even play hardly. And so it kind of caught on. And then you can find videos of him that they like joke videos on YouTube. They call him the White Mamba because Kobe Bryant was the Black Mamba. Right. And so they have like Brian Scalabrine's top 10 plays, like layups from Summer League, you know. But he's caught on. So good for him. I'm glad that he seemed like a funny guy. So I'm glad he's got a job announcing and doing these other things. It's probably right up his alley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he seems like, I think he does a 3-hour show every weekday, so 3 times the radio time that we have.
Wow.
And so he said, how could you not talk about random trades once in a while?
Right. Well, we'll see if he knows anything or not.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving this year is supposed to be a little bit cheaper for you if you're here in the U.S. and you're doing Thanksgiving. They say the average cost of this year's feast for 10 is $49.87. They must be small eaters.
Mm-hmm.
10 people? Woo. That's like, yeah, that's cheap. They say a 24-cent decrease from last year's average of $50.11. The Farm Bureau said Thursday the traditional holiday dinner's cost was down less than 1%. This year, from 2015, it marks only the third time in a decade that the annual survey shows an overall price decline. A 16-pound turkey, the biggest single-ticket item in the meal, averaged $22.74 this year. That's 1.3% below 2015. So the turkeys are in abundance, and they're cheaper this year, so you can buy two.
Can you believe that's already just exactly a week away?
Yeah, that's right. It sneaks up on you, doesn't it? Yeah, it's amazing. And then, of course, traditionally, the next day is the big Black Friday,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense because been getting these junk emails about Black Friday, and I'm like, well, surely that's a couple months away. And then I looked down, and I thought, nope, it's not.
Right.
It's coming up. But anyway, not a lot cheaper, but hey, it's better than being more expensive if you're going to go out and buy a turkey. But you got to buy them because they always sell out.
Yeah, that's right. It's funny how Black Friday comes right on the heels of the one holiday where we're all supposedly being thankful, and then the next day it's like people getting trampled to death in a store so that we can get the best deals.
Right. And some people are really serious about that. I mean, they're out there in line for hours. Some places even open up at like, you know, the night before, whether it's 10 or midnight or whatever. They're serious about their shopping. And I think I only went out one time just to kind of say or to see what it was all about. I usually stay away from the stores because it's so crowded. And I did go out one time years ago, and it was really crowded. I thought, oh, how crowded could it be? I was mistaken. It was very crowded.
A few years ago, my mom and my sisters and probably some of my sister's friends tried to convince me to go. And I said, in my nightmares, why would I ever want to be involved in something like that? It just seems like, especially with a bunch of women who are going to be shopping forever,
yeah.
if the stereotype holds true.
Yeah, I didn't ever really see any exceptional deals. They might be out there, I don't know, but I've never seen anything that was worth trampling somebody for.
Well, all the good deals are taken up pretty quickly, probably snatched right out of other people's hands.
And now you got Cyber Monday that comes on the heels of Black Friday. So we kind of keep it going. Let's get something for Tuesday.
Yeah, Cyber Monday is a nice one because at least you don't have to necessarily go anywhere.
Yeah, you can just look online. But so that's all coming up pretty soon. And that's a big thing for the retail. They always need to make their money at that time, which, of course, is why they call it Black Friday. They need to get out of the red and start making some money. But I guess it's probably taken on more of a sinister term because it seems like there's always like stampedes or somebody gets hurt or unfortunately that can happen.
It seems like people die every year from just the sales.
Yeah. Years ago, they died of the Black Plague. Now we die of Black Friday.
It has the exact same connotation now. It's unbelievable.
Same thing.
It's only supposed to mean getting out of debt for these stores, but no, it's actually a death plague, apparently.
It's a double meaning. Angela Merkel is expected to say on Sunday if she'll run for office in 2017. That's a big deal. She's been, it's been 4 terms for her in office, I think. She's been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They say German Chancellor Angela Merkel is expected to announce on Sunday whether she will run for a fourth term. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess she was third term. If she will run for a fourth term in next year's federal election, according to Deutschland Media Group that I cannot pronounce. Redaktion Netzwerk. Pretty good.
Admirable.
Yeah, I don't know. It's close. I just saw a lot of letters and K's and T's where they shouldn't usually be next to each other. The report cited sources in the executive board of Merkel's Christian Democrats, the CDU. A spokesman for the chancellery declined to comment when contacted by Reuters. At a regular government news conference earlier on Wednesday, Stefan Siebert, Merkel's spokesman, said the chancellor would make her intentions clear at the appropriate time. So it might be Sunday, might be some other time, and she's apparently going to announce whether she'll run or not. The next German election is going to be between the 27th of August and 22nd of October 2017. They have kind of weird rules where it doesn't have to be an exact day. It just has to fit in a certain time window. So
that's odd. We have November 8th.
Yeah.
That is the exact day. And actually, it did go into November 9th because we were unsure for such a long time. But do you want a lock for who's not going to win the next German chancellorship? I feel like she doesn't have the best chance right now.
I don't think so either. I think people are kind of... Well, they're just agitated over there because of some of her policies. They've had a really good run under her for quite a while, but now there is, of course, the migrant issue, terrorism, and financial stuff, too. That's easy to kind of forget about, but the whole EU has kind of had financial issues, some of the nations anyway, Greece and others. And then there's the Brexit. So there's a lot going on there, over here in the States, we don't hear a whole lot, unless you dig around a little bit about what the feeling is exactly, but my guess would be that they're not real happy with her.
No, it just seems like she's just a prime example of how liberal policies fail, but the people who have those ideas are not usually directly affected, so they just keep on going forward with these same failed plans. I mean, letting migrants flood your country, all these things... They just are bad ideas, but maybe she doesn't have to live right next to the people who are potential threats.
Yeah, so we'll see if anything comes out on Sunday about that. And then, of course, I guess everyone would be wondering who's going to be next. Who's next up there in Germany? Because they are a powerhouse in Europe. And, of course, the Trumpet.com has a lot written about what's going on over there in Germany and what you can expect to see in the future as well. So that'll be interesting, the next election between the 27th and 20th of August and 22nd of October. Whenever they feel like it. Whenever they decide. I guess they just have to, it has to be within a certain amount of months after the first meeting of their government after an election or something. I think that's pretty close.
So she still has almost a year left in power since the election isn't until late next year.
Yeah. And there's been, you know, she has been in office a long time, and there's been some talk of her just being tired. I mean, you get worn out after a while, and even if you've been a really good leader, I think people get tired of it after a while. That happens. That happens in different. I think over history, it seems like it does, where people get sick of the liberals, and then they vote in the conservatives,
right.
And then they get sick of the conservatives to vote in the liberals, and both times they think that this new way will solve everything, but it's always kind of the same.
She was a great leader until a storm of harsh reality hit all these different problems at the same time.
Yeah,
and she just. Clearly wasn't prepared to deal with them all.
Yeah. Well, and then here in the States, everyone's wondering who's going to be in Donald Trump's cabinet. And so they're watching the doors of Trump Tower. Who's coming and going? Who are the bigwigs coming and going? And everyone's watching it, paying attention. I would love to just go in there for a visit. Mm-hmm. People will be like, who's this guy? I'm just here on sightseeing. I'm not part of this.
I think it's just outrageous how they keep saying that Breitbart website manager, who he's considering, is a white nationalist and all these other derogatory terms. There's been no evidence to say something like that at all, except for the fact that they consider Breitbart an alt-right website now.
Yeah. Well, this story kind of ties into that, just some of the feeling that's out there. And this just really displays hypocrisy. This is from Heat Street. It says, DePaul threatens, University of DePaul, threatens to arrest Ben Shapiro for stepping foot on campus.
Right.
He's a conservative author and commentator. And so keep in mind, while listening to these details, a lot of these universities, I don't know if DePaul's in the mix, but I would think they are saying, we want to let all the illegals stay on our campus. Let them all stay here. We want safe zones for illegal immigrants. But then somebody that is an actual citizen who just has a differing opinion, don't you dare set foot on this campus. That's the hypocrisy of it. They threatened to arrest him, as you'll see here. It says, when conservative author and commentator Ben Shapiro showed up on DePaul University's campus Tuesday night, security guards were ready to escort him off the property or have him arrested for trespassing. Shapiro was banned from DePaul's campus in August after the administration raised concerns that their security force could not handle any potential student unrest that would accompany Shapiro's presentation. So you could translate that into what it means, which is they were bullied by the students and said, well, we can't have him here, which is ridiculous. But he showed up. He was invited there to speak with a group there on the campus. And Shapiro had gotten wind earlier on Tuesday that DePaul was considering using their security forces to enforce their August ban, and that it included not just a ban on Shapiro speaking to the student body, but a ban on him even stepping foot anywhere on DePaul's campus. Can't even go watch sports, I guess. Or go to the cafeteria for a snack. Come on now. It says in the video, Shapiro can be... What if you wanted to enroll? Can I go to school here? In the video, Shapiro can be seen asking several dozen security guards why such a huge force is necessary to keep him from entering campus, as there was no protesters to be seen. So there's not even any protesters, and they still have the security force there. He says, I'm wondering, why is it so necessary to keep me personally out? And the security guard replies, the bottom line is it's private property. Oh, private property. So you could tell anybody to leave. How about the illegals that are on your campus? Could you tell them to leave too?
Or,
yeah.
It just seems like they should be saying that, actually.
Yeah. I mean, if your argument on one hand is, well, you can't come here because it's private property. Well, isn't the United States as a whole private property if you're an illegal citizen or an illegal immigrant trying to live here?
Exactly. There's just no talking to these people. There's just no logic there. Apparently, the people in charge of DePaul are heavily in favor of illegal immigrants, and they'll even let them be at the college, which I didn't know until the last couple of days that was possible, that you could somehow enroll at a college and be able to attend without showing any documents.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all. I went to college. That wasn't the case. I had to show some proof of my existence. Mm-hmm. What's their mascot? The Demon Deacons? No, that's Wake Forest.
Yeah, that's right.
What's DePaul?
I don't know. What they are... I thought there was something similar to that, actually.
Yeah, I did, too. I'm going to look that up because, I don't know, I'm just curious. But anyway, Wake Forest, there's always kind of confused me. I'm like, what does that mean, even?
Helpers of Satan's helpers.
Yeah. They're the Blue Demons. DePaul Blue Demons.
There you go.
There
See?
It is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
We're pretty close.
I'm not really sure. I'm sure it doesn't mean exactly what it sounds like, but they can't go there with the Blue Demons. Got to stay off the campus. Private property now. Stay off of here. Oh, please. Private property on a college campus. People roam those campuses all the time.
Even if there were protesters there who were threatening to cause a big problem, if you made it clear as the university that there would be consequences, then maybe there wouldn't be a big problem at all, and they could just let people with different viewpoints speak on campus. It's supposed to be an ideologically diverse place, but instead, the only diversity they care about is people from all different countries, as long as they believe the same thing.
Yeah, it should be disturbing to a lot of people when a group of kids have the right to, or think they have the right, or take the right upon themselves to shut up anybody that they don't agree with.
Could you even imagine that happening here?
No.
I could, yeah. If a single person decided to act out, they'd be gone today.
Yeah. Armstrong College is a little different. We're not the Blue Demons. This is an interesting story. This probably doesn't happen for a lot of people, but they say it's somewhat common. Surprisingly common disorder could make you gain weight in your sleep. So anyone that wants to lose a little weight, which it's a lot of us, is don't get too excited and think, see? It's because of my sleep. No, it's not quite that, but this is an interesting story from CBS New York. It can happen. Gentleman's name is Jason Carney. He was struggling with a demanding job. He was putting on weight, and he decided to make some adjustments in his life. He and his family moved. He started to diet. He tracked calories on his phone, and he quit smoking. He says, but I wasn't losing any weight at all, and the reason why was right in front of him. He says, I would wake up the next morning and see food wrappers in the kitchen, but he didn't know where they came from. His Fitbit indicated he'd been up as many as 6 or 7 times eating in his sleep. He's a sleep eater, and he didn't know it. It sounds fantastic, but I think there's probably something to it. It says, in the morning, I would have wrappers here, here, and here, he said. It went on for years. He tried to control it himself. I guess he figured out he was doing it with sleep aids and vitamins. He even installed motion alarms, but nothing would wake him up. He'd wake up, he said, crackers, chips, Cliff bars. He just was eating it all night. So why am I so heavy, and where'd all the food go? But here's the reason why. They say Dr. Ranji Vargas, he's diagnosed Carney with a sleep-related eating disorder that he said was related to his years as a smoker. It got back to the fact that he smoked for all those years. There's a significant number of patients like Carney who have these nicotine cravings. They're still so strong that they act like a trigger. And often patients with the disorder will be so out of it, they'll eat things like raw bacon or butter to satisfy their hunger. He says they're not awake. Their brain is still sleeping. They're just engaging in these complex behaviors. They'll eat these unusual foods, go back to bed, and have no recall that it even happened. I lock the fridge door. I don't know.
Someone needs to chain him down to his bed, not let him get up during the night.
Something. Yeah. Well, you wake up and your pillow's gone.
That could be the next problem.
Where did it go? So anyway, really interesting story, I guess, if a person was a smoker, that is something that could happen. I don't know if it could happen otherwise. But anyway, this guy was getting up 6 or 7 times a night. And he said that once they started kind of treating him, he was able to overcome it. But so anyway, they say if that is happening to you, maybe you should check it out. Look for rappers.
That's a lot of movement throughout the night, though. Maybe him getting up that many times could almost offset all the extra food he's eating.
he should have set up an obstacle course for him to get to the fridge. Then when he was sleeping, he would have been working out and eating. It would have been perfect. Why am I so fit? Why are there monkey bars in the kitchen?
Don't remember this.
Well, you know, some people really do have issues with sleepwalking. I've never done it that I know of, and I assume somebody would have told me if I had. I've known some that have sleepwalked, you know what I mean? It's odd. I've seen it, you know, and you're like, hello, you know, hey, how's it going? And they're not quite with it. It's a weird feeling.
It is. I think I've done it maybe once or twice, and it's always very embarrassing because whenever people tell you in the morning what you did, and then you don't feel so good about yourself.
There was years ago, I saw one of those, Dateline or something like that, where this guy had committed a murder, and his defense was that he was sleeping. He didn't know he did it. And so I don't know if they ever got to the bottom of it. Like, how do you prove that? But I don't know. I mean, that's pretty extreme, of course. But some people do. They just get up and roam around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You have to be careful, I guess. If you knew that you were somebody that was prone to that, you know, like you wouldn't want to start driving around, right? Or I suppose things like that. But anyway, this fellow ate a lot. So another thing he could do is just get rid of all the junk food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he just set out a bunch of fruit and veggies.
All of a sudden his problem disappears.
Yeah. His whatever that is, his sleeping self is like, oh, come on. I'm not going to eat that. I'm going back to bed. But yeah, you'd have to be careful. It's so funny how the brain could do that. Like you could function, make a fairly smart decision. Like, you know what food is. You're not eating your shoe, right? I think. But then not remember it, how it operates on a couple of levels. That's just really fascinating.
Yeah, there has to be something to that. Like, with the guy who committed the murder, it seems like that would be a bit of a stretch unless maybe things like that were already in his mind, you know? If he wasn't thinking violent thoughts or taking in violent media, then he probably wouldn't have committed a murder in his sleep. But and this guy was bigger, but apparently that was only connected to cigarette usage and not
right.
His size.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Yeah, you ever have that where you're falling asleep and then you don't really realize you're falling asleep, and then you kind of start, you know, you like you're kind of having a dream about something, all of a sudden you're like,
exactly.
You do that all the time. Yeah, I've had that happen a few times, and it's kind of funny, especially once you get married and you end up hitting your wife accidentally, punching her in the arm. Oop, sorry about that. I thought I was trying to block a shot in basketball.
Exactly. It's always a motion that you're trying to make in the dream, and before you get hurt or something, you wake up.
Yeah, it's always a strange feeling. It's embarrassing too, if there were people to see that type of thing. So we've talked sometimes about some of the bizarre college courses that are offered out there, and this one is the weirdest one I've heard of so far. Of course. This is a college course. There's a college class on the philosophy of the Simpsons. What do you think about that?
Well, they've gained a lot of credibility because didn't they predict Donald Trump to be the president?
Yeah, I think they did, if I remember correctly.
So maybe that's why they're taking them seriously now.
I don't know. It says, with a history-making run of new episodes ahead of it, which the Simpsons is one of the longest, if not the longest, running show, I think. The cartoons never get older somehow. It's funny though, if you look at some of the originals, you can tell it was a different artist.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, that doesn't look exactly like Homer.
They've updated the quality of the art.
Yeah, the Simpsons is now serving as the inspiration of one major college's new course. Starting in January of 2017, the University of Glasgow will begin offering one-day classes, which that's about, I guess, all they should be, based on the philosophical and higher thinking side of the popular Matt Groening creation, dubbed, this is the actual name of the class, Dope, The Simpsons Introduce Philosophy. That's what Homer Simpson always says that.
Right.
It says the class will be taught by Dr. John Donaldson and present the, quote, sophisticated philosophical themes at work in the Fox program. In an official statement, Dr. Donaldson explains, he says, the man behind The Simpsons was a student of philosophy, and that comes through in each episode. The Simpsons is a very sophisticated work of popular culture with a broad scope and depth and is full of philosophical themes. Very pleasing. Pleasingly, the course has proved to be incredibly popular on social media. I would think so. It has gone viral. We've never really had a response like this before. So all the classes that they've ever offered in the history of the university have never been as popular as Dope.
Is it popular, or is it maybe people expressing their shock on social media that this is even a class?
I don't know. I could see it being very popular because a lot of people have watched The Simpsons over the years, and if you can get a college credit towards your degree and this is a blow-off class and you can talk about The Simpsons, I could see a lot of people signing up for that.
Definitely, yeah. How long has that been? It's been like 20 years or something that show has been on.
Yeah. I remember, I think when it first came out, and I was probably in like fifth grade, so it was a long time ago. But the show has changed over the years. Not that I've seen a few episodes here and there, but it seems like it used to be that Bart Simpson was the star of the show, and then it changed to Homer Simpson being kind of the star of the show. Mm-hmm. But so anyway, I'm sure everyone's probably seen an episode here or there, or at least some of it. But now they want to have a whole college course on it. So if you want to spend your money on that, go ahead.
Wow, it's been 29 years since they've debuted as a family on a different show, and then 2 years later, so it's been 27 years since they've had their own show.
Wow.
So clearly, they are extremely popular. Most shows don't go more than maybe 5 years, if they're successful. Even a show as popular as American Idol, I believe, has already ended recently.
Yeah, it's hard to stay relevant and popular. And it's funny because as I'm flipping through the channels occasionally, because I think it's on Sunday night, so after a football game or something, if I'm flipping through the channels, it's on. And my kids are always like, oh! I'm like, no, it's not what you think it is. It's not like a kid cartoon.
Right.
You know, it's got more, quote-unquote, sophisticated and philosophical themes.
Right.
As they've said here. But so anyway, there's going to be a whole course in that. So, of course, that's a new college class that's happening on the philosophy of The Simpsons. So we'll see. we'll see if there's more about that in the future. You know, now we study Shakespeare, and I guess in 100 years they'll be studying The Simpsons.
So it's just a one-day class. There's nothing more than the single day.
Yeah, I didn't quite get if it was just one day or like it's like
one day
a series
week.
Of.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I didn't quite get the. It must be a little more than just one day, but yeah. So we're gonna be talking about that. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And listeners around the world, had a nice email in from a listener in Barbados, and they sent us a video of, it was a video that Grant, you had sent me earlier of Van Jones having a fight with that one lady.
Oh, it's amazing.
It was just kind of a meltdown, so... we were talking about that the other day, so they sent that clip again, and it was interesting to see it again. And so we appreciate those emails and those links and different things that people send to comments@kpcg.fm. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter @kpcgfm. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here, and Abraham Blondo stopping by. Abraham, you plan on taking that class on The Simpsons?
Well, I guess I'll have to ponder it. So,
is that big in Canada? Do people watch The Simpsons?
Oh, yes.
Really big, yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone has their own informal class on The Simpsons anyway, like in their own house, so I don't think it's too big of a stretch that they would have an actual college course on it.
You know, when I was thinking about this course, I was envisioning, like, who would be taking it, and I had this mental image of the gentleman that worked down at the Lego store.
Right.
Because I go in there with my son, and they're always talking about sci-fi or Simpsons,
right,
or something, and they're all like about 40. So I just envision those guys.
In middle school, I took a class on film and film and more of the philosophy behind different movies and that sort of thing, what they're trying to portray. And I couldn't believe it was a class because we just watched clips and then talked about them when we were done.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I got credit for it. So I'm not surprised something like that is popular. But, I mean, maybe there's more of the Homer than meets the eye, the ode of Homer. So who knows?
Yeah. They thought it was going to be some Greek philosophy. And so not that Homer. Yeah. It's this other one. Yeah.
They look similar, but they're different Homers.
I had a film study class in college. And, of course, I was more interested in that. And it had some relevance, but at the end of the day, we were just watching movies, and which was fine. It was okay until there was some that were pretty rough. And I remember, like, oh, no. You know, you go to class, and I'm like, here's what we're going to watch today. And, boy, that's some that were pretty rough. And I remember watching one, and I should have just left, but I don't know. I just didn't think about it much. But leaving is just being like, oh. What did I just see? You know, people get into weird stuff. And even like in where I went to school, I remember they had the art department, and I've mentioned this before, but like every semester they would put their projects out in the hallway, like the common area we all walk through. And I remember one year it was just like normal objects, but they made them really big. So it was like a giant cereal box made out of paper mache and then a giant shoe. You know, you're just looking at this stuff like, what? What are you guys doing?
Oh, the people who made that giant Donald Trump head must have taken the same class.
Maybe that's why
that's
they take
it. That's
where it came from. Yeah, it's like the art of protesting.
Oh,
like,
I thought they were building homes for the homeless program.
Donald Trump head? A cereal box?
So it's just some weird stuff at some of those different colleges. But here's an interesting thing before we jump into your story, Abraham. 7 things successful people never buy, they say. It's kind of a misleading title. Some of it's not actually like buying things in that sense, but it's just 7 ways they use their money, I guess. One thing they never pay for is bank fees, which I think is probably a good idea if you can avoid that. 2, interest on credit cards. That's another thing that's good to avoid. Extended warranties, they say. I've had some warranties come in handy, but I don't think they were extended. I think they were just the regular ones. Lottery tickets. Yeah, that's a good one not to waste your money on. I always wonder how much, you know, people that are in a really rough spot, not always the case, but a lot of cases are buying lotto tickets. You think, well, maybe just hang on to that cash. You're a winner. You won. Just don't buy the ticket.
I think if most people, because once in a while people win the big jackpot, yeah. But if you saved up all the money you were spending on lotto tickets every week, month, you probably end up with more money than that one time you win like a few $100 or $1,000.
Yeah, and the ones that win the big one, they usually end up in worse shape at the end than before. The 5th thing they avoid, successful people, impulse buys. Sorry. Number 6, they stay away from low interest savings accounts. Well, depends how much cash you've got. I mean, yeah, if you've got $10 million, you can call the shots. If you got 10, you got to do what you got to do. Number 7, they stay away from high-end brands for the sake of high-end brands. Sometimes it's not worth it. And they don't spend on that. So anyway, those are some tips that might be handy to you.
I fall short in 3 of those categories. So at least I have 4 of them, right? Bank fees, I've definitely paid those. Impulse buys.
And lottery tickets?
Every day. No. Yeah, lottery tickets. I think what was the 3rd one?
extended warranties.
No. It was the one low, right after the...
Low interest savings accounts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to avoid that, though.
You just got to have more cash. Yeah. Because then they offer you a better package.
I see.
Us commoners don't have too much of a choice.
I get like 2 cents of interest added to my savings every like 3 months.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you ever like, so tell me about this savings account. They're like, well, no big deal. It's great. Just have a $100,000 minimum balance. I'm like, ah, and what's the other packages we have to offer? $100,000,
you say. No big deal. It's great.
So that's some tips that might be somewhat helpful. By the looks of Abraham's suit, he can't stay away from the high-end brands. You have a story here, Abe, from the Economist. China, and this ties into the Trumpet Daily Radio Show a little bit, just from the standpoint of China. Mr. Stephen Fleury on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today is talking about how a trade war between the U.S. and China is a brewing. Donald Trump's been talking about that. How he's going to tax everyone into oblivion if they, you know, China and so forth. But, of course, that ends up creating trade wars, which will lead to hot wars. So make sure you do listen for that program. A lot of good sound bites again and clips there. This article you have from The Economist is about China. China is struggling to keep control over its version of the past. History is always an interesting thing because people have varied versions of it. What's China doing?
Yeah, so this is a pretty interesting look into communist China because it is not very transparent. I'm sure Xi Jinping goes to a lot of steak dinners the press doesn't know about.
Those are sushi dinners.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But it has been a decade-long struggle for the government and how they can censor the internet, how they write history books to present a certain specific version of events that makes China look good, especially when you compare it to other nations. And this is something they've really struggled with because as more people have access to more information about the world, they start realizing, like, well, in America, they see the lifestyle of Americans, of Europeans, and they wonder why they don't have it. And they wonder why these institutions of freedom we have in these different countries aren't in China.
Yeah, that's really interesting because wasn't that what Russia said back in the Cold War, that they feared the U.S. culturally?
Yes.
Yeah, they feared that what we have over here. In some cases, maybe it would be positive, like certain freedoms, but in other cases, you know, the protesting and the kind of agitating that goes on, it does definitely make things difficult for leaders. And sometimes that's good, but sometimes it's not. I could see them. Or on the morality issues. I mean, there's a lot of things to discuss there.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting to look through the eyes of the Chinese government because they look at America today, they see a lot of cultural, problems, immorality, and things they don't agree with their moral code that they don't want with America or European societies. But yet they do want the wealth and the success that comes with a capitalist society, which usually has to have certain freedoms in order to exist. And so with this article here, they're looking into how the Chinese government is trying to balance the two, bring in some capitalist ideas that they have been into the economy, but also maintain their version of historical events where the West is the enemy and Chinese communism is like the messiah of world governments. And obviously, they go through a few examples, especially in the Tiananmen Square, 1989. That's when the youth uprising hit its max, when people realized or they didn't agree with communist institutions, and so they were smashed.
Yeah.
We still don't know how many people died or were arrested or what happened to them.
I remember being pretty young and watching that unfold, and it was on the news, I think, for a few nights. I don't remember how long it went on, but, you know, it was every night. It was an update, the protests. And, you know, I mean, people here in the West get kind of excited. Oh, they're going to overthrow the government. And I remember it very specifically sitting on the couch in my parents' living room watching it when it broke. And they're like, and it's over. I mean, China just crushed it. And there was the famous scene of the tank and the person trying to get in the way of it and all of that. And it was interesting, even as a smaller child that didn't totally get what was going on there. It was just so much talk, done.
Yeah.
And it's over. And that's just the way they took care of it, and they crushed it.
That seems so brutal, but now we see people just having free reign to burn the cities. And now it's almost like, which option is better? Because the police here are almost powerless to stop these different things.
Yeah, that's always the difficulty, I think, that any government kind of struggles with. It's like if you don't have some sort of control or power, the people can just riot and do whatever. But if you have too much, then it becomes like this military regime like you see in Egypt or other places where they just have to crush any uprising, or Iran. I just thought of Egypt because they've had that shift in power. So it is always tough, and I think a lot of it comes down to the responsibility of the people themselves to maintain some order, and the media, too, to not foment all the rage like they're doing here in the U.S. especially. So it is a delicate balance.
Yeah, and that's the struggle of governments is finding that balance, but also the people using responsibility and not just rights to do whatever they want.
Which in a lot of cases, like today here in the U.S., everyone's yelling about rights, and they're doing things that they don't even have the right to do.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just yell, I've got a right, and then, you know, go steal your neighbor's car. There are laws in place. You have certain rights, but not to just riot and go crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing the Founding Fathers want to make clear in the Constitution is that it's a law for responsible citizens. And that's the only way it will work, is if people are responsible, that there aren't any... Freedom does not mean you have the choice to do whatever you like. There are certain restraints. And with China, what's interesting about the historical or the historiography of China and what we're talking about.
Explain historiography.
So historiography is just basically the way history is told.
Okay.
That's basically all that word means.
It's a fancy way to say it.
Yes. Yeah. It's a fancy word for my fancy suit. but it's interesting because in Chinese history books, Tiananmen Square is seen as this evil uprising against the Chinese government. And the Chinese government nobly went in and saved the Chinese people.
Right.
That's how they portray that in history. Same thing with the Korean War. In China, they have, in Beijing, they have a huge museum called, and it's dedicated to the Korean War, but they call it the War Against American Aggression.
Right.
They don't call it the Korean War. And so people visit it, and they go in, and it depicts America as this evil imperial force coming to invade Asia, and the Chinese stood up and defeated them.
Well, that's even, you know, there's been some pictures that get leaked out of North Korea, which I'm always fascinated. I'm a sucker for those.
Mm-hmm.
Clickbait, that's me. North Korea photos? What? Just to see what life is like in there. And you see some of that in those pictures where, you know, North Korea is this great bastion of freedom and hope and joy, and everyone's excited, and all that terrible U.S., you know. But like you say, the more the internet's available or however, not that they have access to a lot of that, but if they can get access to some things, they realize, wait a minute, that's not really the way the world is. But that's what they're taught, and so how would you know any different?
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting to see how the world's most populous country have a completely different version of events than how we view it. And so when we go into negotiations and we talk about their view of world politics, it's way different. And because they have a different history book that's altered, it keeps out events, it adds their own events in. And so it's really a difficult subject approach. But what's interesting, what The Economist brings out is that they're having a hard time keeping this a realistic thing for their people, because people have more access to the internet, as you mentioned. People are traveling more. And so it's a lot harder for them to keep their hand on what the people are thinking. And they fear that because they're having a secret meeting, the top leaders in the Communist Party, they're having this meeting, and they think it's because they're sensing another Tiananmen Square moment in the people, where people are starting to become a little more rebellious, or they feel like they need to have a better voice in the government for what they want and the direction their country wants to take. So when it comes to history, I think it's interesting to think about China and how they have a version of history to justify their own government, and how a lot of other nations do that too, including the United States. How many times has history or events been changed or lied about to make a certain leader look good, when the actual events on the ground, the truth isn't actually told?
Well, the difference here in the U.S. has usually been that the press would kind of keep people maybe a little more honest. But now with the press, but what you have in these nations, like in North Korea especially, or maybe China too, I'm not totally sure on China, but I think it's pretty much state-run. You know, the press is just a mouthpiece, so they're just going to tell you what the officials want. And we're starting to see that more here in the U.S. as well, particularly over the last 8 years, where, you know, and now we see it on the other side, where they're trying to point out every little flaw that they perceive. So it is interesting. But like you say, there are a lot of people from China that do come over here to college, come to universities, and obviously they're going to get maybe a different reading on things, whether they agree with it or not. And who knows? I mean, they may not be taking history classes, if they probably can't find them. They should come over and take the history of the Simpsons.
That's right.
Yeah, they give some. They'll be like, "This is a different history than I'm familiar with."
They'll say, "Just like everything I've been told about you people."
Yeah, it's true. It's exactly like that. That's probably what they'd see. They watch the Simpsons and
be disgusted by
their
culture.
Shows. And yeah.
Well, it's interesting, even bringing in the movies we were talking about with the historiography in the U.S. and how that's under threat too, because a lot of people, they don't read history anymore. They don't. It's hard to find relevant history in universities. And so people watch movies, and that's their only version of events. That's, for them, that's factual history. And we know a lot of movies, there might be based on true events, and there is some truth in them, but obviously it's a lot different than what actually happened. And so that's a danger too. And I think in the Western Hemisphere, where people are looking to media to get their version of events, and there is some truth in that, but you can't get the full story without actually seriously learning about history. And we're seeing a really I guess, generation of people who don't take history seriously, or they're growing up with a lot of revisionism, and that's creating kind of the same effect in the U.S. as there is in China, just that it's not as heavy-handed, obviously.
Right. Yeah, the article's at The Economist. China is struggling to keep control over its version of the past, and it's an interesting read if you get a chance to do that. One other story here that Grant, you have for us, is from Fox News. This is it says Oregon official who bullied Christian bakery owners loses election. So maybe you can remind us of what the details were about this. I remember it being in the news. They were because they wouldn't make the cakes for the different weddings and so forth?
Right. Basically, yeah. He sought out this bakery that wouldn't make a cake for a lesbian couple. And he waged war against them. This was back in 2013.
Right.
And he made them pay $135,000 in emotional damages to the lesbians, which...
do you pay that with money or with, like, handshakes? Or how do you pay emotional damage back?
Loaves of bread.
Apparently, you pay it in $135,000.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So that official loses the election in a turn of justice here, apparently.
Yes, this guy's name is Brad Avakian, and he was defeated by a Republican to be the Oregon Secretary of State. It's the first time a Republican has been elected to a statewide office in Oregon since 2002.
Yeah.
Which just shows you this militantly anti-Christian bully was even too liberal for the most liberal state in the country, possibly.
Yeah, I was amazed by the fact that it was in Oregon. And, that does show that you can actually be too liberal, even for the liberals. you got to take the temperature of the room a little bit, and they mistook the temperature.
Yeah, he really missed out on how people might have thought about this. And really, we've even seen it in the national election. People are just getting tired of political correctness, but also silencing and threatening anyone who disagrees with your viewpoints. That you're seeing it here and you're seeing it nationwide. This same guy also made a bar pay $400,000 because they didn't want transgender patrons. They didn't want to become known as a quote gay bar,
right?
And so they had this bar had to pay $400,000 also as a result of the same guy.
Yeah, and it's really targeting people to persecute them, because it's not as if they couldn't have gone to some other establishment, or you couldn't have gone to another bakery. I'm sure somebody would bake your cake. I mean, but this is targeting. And I guess that this official felt like, you know, it was discrimination, but at the same time, that crosses the line into, well, people do have a right. They do have a right to believe what they want. I mean, if they have a religious belief that says we don't agree with that, they don't have to be forced into that one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of bakeries out there.
Right. That's the thing, is they're actually searching out the one in 100, 200, 300 bakeries out there that maybe won't serve people because of deeply held religious beliefs. They don't believe marriage is between those types of people. They believe it's between a man and a woman. It's that simple. And they feel like if they're baking a cake for someone who doesn't fall into those categories, then it's basically a sin. It's contradicting their beliefs.
Right. And they do have a freedom to believe what they want without being fined $100,000. It's a lot of money for anybody, especially a bakery. That's kind of it's a smaller business typically. Mm-hmm. And, that's just a shame to do that and really hurt their livelihood.
Yeah. And the punishment really, if you think about it, went far beyond the $135,000, because they also faced, of course, the obvious boycotts and the picket lines from the radical left and people who were offended by this. And then other wedding vendors were threatened with similar fines if they had any sort of business with this Klein family bakery called Sweet Cakes. I love that name. The family's young children were even threatened. They received death threats. And the store's social networking platforms were overrun by these militant activists who were posting obscene and profane messages. So the kids weren't even safe from these attacks.
It's unbelievable to me, because on one side here, the people that feel like they should have cakes made for them, like that's their argument, right? We want you to make us a cake. And they say, no, we don't want to. So their response is to threaten them with death. It seems no matter what side of that people come down on, that's just and it just shows the militantism, like you said, just the violence of you're going to do what we tell you or else. That's just a crazy response.
It's not a natural response at all. It's a really hateful response, and you have to wonder where that response came from, really, because I mean, think about it. if you went into a restaurant and someone said, "Well, we don't really want to serve you here," I'd be like, "Fine, I just won't come back."
Right.
And I'll tell my friends that I don't necessarily like your restaurant, but I'm not going to threaten you with death. I'm just going to give you a bad review, word of mouth.
Yeah, it's just really interesting. Well, anyway, justice came about apparently because they weren't elected. So I can just imagine what the ads would have been both sides of that campaign, you know.
Yeah.
Do you want to elect the bakery man? He wants to have his cake and eat it too. It'd be all kinds. I could just see the ads now.
It's really fun.
I'll have to look them up on YouTube, see if they're out there.
Probably really vicious ads, yeah. More than you would expect from a local government election.
Vote for me or I'll kill you.
That's probably what he would say.
That's probably what
he's thinking.
That's what happened to the bakery, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, too, because these bakers, the clients, are represented by the First Liberty Institute, and one of their officials said about this election, this shocking election result, "Perhaps this will serve as a point of reflection for government leaders that the people of Oregon and indeed most Americans believe in tolerance and respect and the dignity of each person to live their lives according to the dictates of their own consciences." So that's not necessarily saying living according to God's laws, but at the same time, this is America and people should be able to have their own privately held beliefs as long as they're not forcing them on someone else.
Right. And there's a really good book at thetrumpet.com on redefining family, which is a free one. And they all are. And you can get that and read it online or get it sent to you. And it does highlight the violent aggression from that side of things where it's not a matter of, you know, we just want to be left alone and do our thing. It's we're going to force what we think on you and you better take it. And if you don't, you know, huge fines, death threats, I mean, come on. It's clearly a bullying tactic. And what's so ridiculous about it, I was watching this one of these sports shows the other day, a little clip where they were debating, just race and some other things, because of the experts, obviously. Mm-hmm. And this one person came out, made this blanket statement that people are agreeing with, even though I think it's completely false. And they said, "Oh, well, you know how it is nowadays. Anybody that's a minority, anybody that's of the, you know, a minority community, well, they're afraid right now. They don't even want to go out in the streets. They're terrified." And they're all like, "Oh, I know. I'm like, really? Because all I see is picket lines, screaming, beating the drum, suing people. I don't see anybody hiding. They're out there more aggressive than anybody. So to sit there and take that line that they're just so scared now, oh, please. Well, if that's the case, I'd hate to see it when they're not scared."
Yeah, that's an interesting point because ever since the Warren era of the Supreme Court, a lot of experts agree we've been living in the age of tyranny of the minority, where minority rights, minority groups have been able to dictate policy over the majority of Americans for decades. And with the election of Donald Trump, it's almost like that switch now to where we have rule of the majority or a majority of people, a switch of that kind of thinking in legislating and all that sort of thing. But that's, I think, a good example of how this special rights activism, especially what that elected official was doing, in pushing minority rights over people who have a right to their own religious freedom, number one. We're seeing a clash of those two ideas right now in America. And it's, I think, a little scary to think about what's going to happen because we never really faced this kind of clash of lifestyles before.
Well, even look at some people. They live in, I think it's a Trump apartment, and his name's on it.
Right.
And there is a big uprising. We don't want his name on the building anymore, so they're going to take the name off, I guess. They're still going to pay him, so I guess it doesn't matter. just put the money in the bank. But I just thought, well, you know, again, it's just such hypocrisy because they lived there for years. What they, you know, he really wasn't any different now than he's ever been, whether they like him or don't. They didn't have a problem before, but now all of a sudden, because it's you know, everyone's talking about it, well, get the name off the building. But how is that any different from the other side of this where they're like, well, they wouldn't make us a cake? we'll get the name off the building. Well, who you can't have your ideas take supremacy over everybody else's, and that's what they're trying to do in a lot of cases. There are thankfully the right to have religious freedom, all kinds of wonderful liberties in this country that we all love. But if you're starting to push that on other people and take away their liberty because of it, it's just hypocritical. It's not going to work.
Yeah, the liberal hate mobs are really out in full force, and a lot of people are just cowering in fear. Probably most people who are protesting or saying they don't like Mr. Trump are saying it because they're afraid of the backlash if they don't say so. For example, with the NBA, again,
sure,
they're not all Democrats, and yet I have not heard a single person say they support Mr. Trump. That's just because they're all afraid of the majority in that case.
They're afraid of the backlash and the outcry and all these things, which is ridiculous. Anyway, interesting write-up. Fox News, Oregon official who bullied Christian bakery owners loses election. If I were them, I'd send them a cake. Sorry. Cake's on us. Cake's on you.
Oh, it'd be hilarious. I hope they think of that.
He'll sue him again, and then they'll owe another $100,000. I hope they get their money back. He should have to pay it out of his coffers.
That's just wrong. That's so costly for a business. That could single-handedly shut a business down.
Yeah, just terrible. But anyway, so a little bit of justice. It looks like there the people didn't even like it. Even there, they didn't like it. They said that's too much. So some of the interesting stories that are going on today, always a lot to discuss, and we appreciate you spending some time with us here on Trumpet Radio Live. That'll do it for us today. For myself, Dwight Folk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondeau, thanks for being with us, and have a great rest of your day. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.